You're listening to Live Law, real stories about the law told live. I'm Nancy Mullane. This week's story is from David Cowan. When David found himself serving time behind bars, he wasn't looking for love. He was just trying to survive. But when his hand touched someone else's, he realized love might be looking for him. Here's David on Love in Spite of the Law.
My experience with love and the law is associated with my time incarcerated. And as I thought about love and the law as a backdrop, I couldn't help but think about love despite the law. And I don't mean that to sound contrary or anything like that. What I mean by that is that sometimes when people do things that cause the law to restrict what they can do, love still finds a way. People still find love, and it can persist in their lives. And so as many of the people here know, when the law dictates that someone should spend time incarcerated, it also prescribes some type of protections for some fundamental American values, if not human rights. And however, it doesn't prescribe any protections for love, which in my opinion is a good thing. I don't think that the law is ready for that. In fact, it actually inhibits love in many ways. Of course, it does not encourage love between prison staff and prisoners for all of the reasons why you might imagine. And it actually interferes with the love between partners and family members. However, love still, under those circumstances, finds a way. And I've seen it. I've seen love expressed in letters, in dark cells, between partners and between fathers and their children. And I've watched love persist in visiting rooms, sometimes for over 30 years with some couples. And I've watched love transform relationships and transcend to new heights as men came to the realization that having a wife was less important than being a husband. And throughout all of that, love still persists, in spite of the law, I think. When I was incarcerated, I had no intention on falling in love or being in love. It wasn't very high on my list of priorities. I wasn't looking for it at all. However, I was doing what I could do to prepare myself for whatever came looking for me. And what I spent my time doing mostly was trying to be an example for people, trying to enhance their lives as I watched everybody around me sit in just horrible turmoil and distress. And what I didn't count on was when I got out, many of the volunteers and staff and people who paroled before me came to my aid and to support me when I got out. One of those people took it upon herself to get me updated technologically, to catch me up to the rest of society, and to help me familiarize myself with public transportation system. She actually tricked me onto a train. even then, I had no idea that I was going to fall in love. I had no idea that anybody would fall in love with me. I still wasn't looking for it. I just wanted to get my life started again. And one day, as we sat relaxing, our hands touched. And then I found myself holding her hand. And then I thought, what in the world are you doing, mister? You've got to be out of your mind. You're not ready for this. Your life isn't really back together. you have no savings, you have nothing together yet. No degrees, you're still getting all of that underway. But I held onto her hand. And as I held onto her hand for the next couple of months, I learned that she was extremely patient as I drug my feet, considering whether or not I wanted to be or should be in a relationship at that time. And as I held on longer, I learned that if I were to make a checklist of who the perfect person for me would be, she qualified in every aspect. I learned that she was she had an incredible insight into herself, the kind of insight that you only see from people who have spent a long time in prison, just rigorously going over every detail of their lives and their personality and their history and their family. That's something that is rare to see of, from people who haven't had to spend that time on themselves. I also discovered that she was very patient. We shared the same interests in my obligations to people who are to parole after me, and my obligations to people who have already paroled and helping them to reintegrate into society the best that they can. And so this mystery woman is right over there, Dr. Rebecca Carter. Say hi, Becca. And, so love can happen despite the law. And I guess there's nothing that anybody can do about that, even the law. But that's a good thing. Thank you.
David Cowan told his story at a recent live law show in San Francisco. Be sure to check out our sister podcast, Life of the Law, featuring investigative reports on the law in our lives. In fact, you can help us out by sharing a story about the law in your life. Have you ever been stopped by police? Were you alone? Or were you with friends? Did you know the rules and did you know what to do? We'd like you to record your story using the voice memo app on your smartphone and then email it to our team at connect@lifeofthelaw.org. That's connect@lifeofthelaw.org. Or you can write out your story and send it to us at the same email address. You can also give us a call and leave your story on our voicemail, 415-761-1LAW. That's 415-761-1529. And be sure to say that you want us to include it in our stories. Next week on Life of the Law.
So yeah, you have almost no rights in a traffic stop. You know, the cop's going to win. And that's not necessarily the cop's fault. The game is rigged, especially with traffic stops. If you're in a battle of wits with a smart traffic cop, you're going to lose.
That's next week on Life of the Law. You can hear our feature reports and our live law stories by visiting our website, lifeofthelaw.org. Or visit infiniteguest.org, or you can search for us on your favorite podcast app. If you'd like your local radio station to air our stories, they can find us at Public Radio Exchange, that's prx.org. Live Law is a production of Life of the Law and is produced by Mary Adkins and Jonathan Hirsch. Seal Muller was our engineer. I'm Nancy Mullane. Thanks for listening.